Right about there. Hi, my name's Lee Johnson. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Lee!
God, your enthusiasm is just unbelievable. Thanks, Dave, for asking me a while back to come and share. I have fun sharing. It was somebody that turned my life around when I was bumbling around in treatment that I heard something I needed to hear there, and I hope maybe something I say tonight may help you out. But you know something? It's none of my business. That's the deal. God, I just see so many people in this room that I know. There's so many. That my home group is the Saturday morning men's group. And it's thanks, you know. And I'm grateful to be sober. I have a home group, I have a sponsor, and a God of my understanding in my life today. Because of that, I've been sober since September 25th of 1993. I feel all of those are very important ingredients in my sobriety. I have a couple sponsors. One is Doug I, and another one is Lloyd G. I know a lot of you know Lloyd G. Say a little prayer for him, would you please? They just put a trach tube in him today. So his time with us is going to be getting shorter all the time, but he's just been an unbelievable mentor for me in my life. He's taken me places that I never thought I'd be going, to be honest with you. You know, it's like getting in a car and let's go. And I was sitting in a meeting one morning at the clubhouse, and he came up and asked me if I'd be willing to start a jail meeting. And I said, sure. I said, God, what's this all about, you know? And it's there's people in this room tonight, the first time I ever met them, are wearing orange. But they're here tonight, and they're sober, you know? And that's fun, and they really clean up nice, I always tell them. But, you know, I'd have missed that. I'd have missed that if I hadn't got into service. And thank you guys for a wonderful roundup. I was able to take into the golf, you know, and that's service work. Hey, we drug a new guy along. God, he had so much fun, he couldn't believe it, you know. And that's the deal, is getting involved with in the outside activities. And that's what I found. That's what my home group did for me. And I feel my home group's the best home group in the world, you know. And I hope, you know, and we're not perfect, but that's the way I feel. And I'm sure if you're a member of this group, that's the way you feel about this group. And you know, and that speaker on your speaker on Saturday night, Tom, I heard him at the last international, and when he talks about that, when he talks about what alcohol did for him, when he put that alcohol in his body, and it was about 11. I was 11 years old, so I was pretty close to when he started. Is that, you know, what that effect of alcohol did for me when I gave me that. Oh, man, it was just like a revelation. Where had this been all my life? And it made everything just fit. From a very early age, I grew up in a little town called Two Harbors, Minnesota. I was an only child. And in those days, about every 6 miles up the road was a 3-2 tavern. I had a giggle when you mentioned Disneyland, because I had an uncle that was a deputy sheriff. And I used to ride along with him. And he was, you know, he was one of us. So I'd ride along with him. I'd sit and I'd be drinking beers down and sitting on the table down there, you know, when I'm 10, 11 years old. And those 3-2 taverns were like Disneyland for me. You know, the jukebox is going, things are happening, and it's just like Cheers, you know. That's where I wanted to be. And I did a lot of things when I started drinking at 11. I played sports. You know, qualified for lettering 1 year, and then the next year I'm ineligible to play, and then the next year I can play again, and you know, it's kind of in and out of those car accidents. And in 18, I ended up going. That's why I go to jail. You know, one of the worst times of my life, I thought at that time, was being sentenced to jail for a year, and just I know the feeling of tearing the hearts out of my parents and the people that love me. You know, so when I go to jail now, I understand a lot, and I can share that experience. That bad time of my life, it's in the promises, as it talks about. You know, some of the worst things that ever happened in my life, I can share my experience freely today, because I'm not a prisoner of my own that old garbage, you know, and as a result of doing the steps in my life, you know, doing a third step and a fourth step. I had sponsors that Calvin knew one of them, Chuck Lohman, God bless him. He was a main part of my life when I first started, and I understand there were so many people in my group that helped me out when I first got here, because I'm a businessman, was back then. I drank myself to success. I got out, you know, I was in the Marine Corps for 4 years, got out, started going to Morehead State. A guy come up, I was bartending. You talk about bartending job? Oh, God. You know, what a place for an alcoholic. I had two bartending jobs and going to Morehead State. One was at the Flame when they used to have the dancers over there. Man, I tell you what, I thought I'd died and gone to heaven, you know. And then one day a guy come up and asked me to go to work for him. And I did. And 14 years later, I ended up owning his half of the business. And that was back in 1986. And I kept chasing whatever it is, you know. And whenever I got to there, wherever there was at, it was never enough. And material things, I kept measuring my self-worth in material things. And it kept chasing that. And along the way of chasing all the material things in my life, I lost myself. And I didn't understand that, because if you'd have looked at me in me and said, what's wrong with Lee's life? What could possibly be wrong with Lee's life? You know, got a beautiful home, got a nice wife, got a business. But inside, it was empty. There was just an emptiness in there. It was a black hole. And one night I was on my way home, after about a 3 or 4 day hard day drinking, and my wife had left for the weekend, and I was on my way home to change clothes, and I rear-ended a federal probation officer, and just smashed the Jesus out of my car and hers, and you know, and it was the same deal all over again. You know, after I was 18 years old and I went to jail, and that's exactly how I feel. All those old feelings came back, and I was 45 years old. You know, I've just, all that self-loathing, all that, you know, like somebody shot a cannon through my guts. And how could I get out of this? But that night after I got out of jail, I went back home. And a neighbor of mine, I called him up, and I knew, you know, in my business, I know a lot of people. And I called a judge that I know, and you know, that was way back then. And he says, well, you're just going to have to do what you have to do, you know, and anyway, my neighbor come and rescued me, and you know what alcoholics do when they need to get rescued? They drink, because I didn't know, honestly, I knew no other way to get rid of that emotional pain. All that stuff that I used to, alcohol would take care of for me. It would just give me that sense of ease, and like in the doctor's opinion, it says that drinking gives you that sense of ease and comfort. It's exactly what alcohol did for me for a long, long time, but it wasn't doing that anymore. And that night, my neighbor rescued me, and we drank. But you know, something that was that night, I couldn't put enough into me. It was just like an out of body experience. I just couldn't make anything go away. Next morning, he called me bright and early, and we had started the day off as I normally would, and I started drinking again. But I couldn't. It was just the most unbelievable experience. And that night, I was over to his house. And I had literally had a half a glass of whiskey and water in front of me, you know. And I looked at that and I'm going, you know, if something doesn't change, nothing's going to change. And I sure wasn't asking God for help, because I did not have any God in my life. A bunch of well-meaning people up in Two Harbors, Minnesota, tried to share their religion with me at the Norwegian Lutheran Church, and I wasn't buying what they were selling. You know, it just seemed like there was a lot of hypocrisy. And so I wasn't asking God for help, you know. And I come to find today, I believe it's a lot of people's prayers, like yours, saying prayers for those people that are still suffering out there that was helping me out. Yeah, but the next morning, I got up, and I had still all had that emotional pain. But for some reason, the thought of having a drink that morning, you know, I just didn't think that it was going to be the answer. And I didn't understand it at that time, but my miracle had actually started that morning. And what I found, I feel my personally, is that night I had a moment of clarity. And that's started me on a journey that I've been on since. I told my wife when she came back that on Sunday night, she says, "Where's our car?" And I says, "Well, it's not in good shape, and I got a DUI, and about as bad a shape as that is." But it's the first time I ever admitted to her that I really had a drinking. She knew I drank a lot, you know, and but I had crossed that line a long time. I think I crossed the line as soon as I put alcohol in my body when I was 11 years old, because I loved it. I drank for the effect, and I drank as much as I could, and as I said, as often as I could. I lived the party. I loved the party. You know, and that led me into a treatment. And I remember for years I said, "Well, I put myself in treatment." You know, that pride and ego. The bottom line is alcohol had beat the shit out of me so bad I didn't really have any other place to go. You know, and I'm grateful for that, because in the chapter, the more about alcoholism, it talks about changing brands and doing this and don't doing that. You know something, by God, when I read that the first time, I couldn't believe, how in the heck would they know all this stuff about me? You know, and when I read, that's what I firmly tell people, that please read the literature. You know, the big book. Read the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Because when I started reading that, I could not believe that they knew so much about me. And I identified with it. But, you know, I was having a hard time. You know, my idea of an alcoholic was some bum that come crawling out from underneath the First Avenue Bridge. See, that was my picture of an alcoholic. And he'd collect enough cans so he could get a bottle of wine and drink it and then go back home, which was under the bridge. See, I was not identifying as being an alcoholic. And I was, when I was in treatment, a gentleman by the name of Maury, God bless him, he passed away here about 2 years ago. He came to the store, or came to the treatment center, and he told his story, and he had been a very successful banker, and you know, da 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 da, and he drank himself out of everything, including his marriages, his banking business, and everything he had earned all through his life, and I identified with that guy, and then he also said, you know, you're here in treatment learning about an illness called alcoholism, you know. But all the knowledge in the world about your illness of alcohol isn't going to really do anything any good if you put into some action. And he says, you have to get in some type of recovery program. And he says, "I'm here on behalf of Alcoholics Anonymous." And literally that was another chink in my armor. Because that night when I said, you know, if something doesn't change, nothing's going to change, Alcoholics Anonymous sure as hell wasn't on my radar screen, I'll tell you that. I knew nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous. If you'd asked me what Alcoholics Anonymous is about, I'd have said it's a bunch of Bible-thumping religious zealots, you know, some emotional cripples. And I guess maybe I am too. But, you know, that was my perception of it, so that would have not. That wasn't even on, AA was not even on my screen. So when he said that he was there on behalf of Alcoholics Anonymous and he shared part of his story, you know, I became willing, and that's what it, you know, the key to me is, or it talks about it in our opera. I call this big book here. I knew I'd find one of these here. You know, I knew I'd find one of these, because that's the big, you know, the book called Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of people lovingly call it the big book. I call it the operator's manual. The operator's manual has all my instructions in here. It tells me how to precisely. This is not voodoo. It's not some, you know. This will tell you. This book will tell you exactly how to get and stay sober. It's willing to know, but it reads easy. It works hard. You know, a lot of people I've run across, I know, especially in jails, AA didn't work for me. I says, guess what? AA doesn't work for me either. I got to work for it. You know. I want to be sober worse than I want to get have all that crap again. And so I get done with my treatment program, and I'm looking for another meeting to fill in that time. I go up to the Sunday night meeting, the Monday night meeting at Hope, which is kind of like my second home group. And there sits the guy that carried the message to me that night. I thanked him so much. You know, I didn't understand that. You know, he just went and shared his story, and I thanked him. I thought, you know, I personally thanked him. He said, you'll see, and now I see. I understand. He was just God's messenger for me that night. You know, that he was the man that kind of cracked my that ego and pride of mine. And I ended up in my home group, and and made friends with Chuck. But I didn't have him as a sponsor to start with. I was about third meeting there, and they said, you need a sponsor. So during the announcements, I stood up and said I needed a sponsor. And a couple guys jumped up, and I picked one, and he was a sponsoree of Chuck's. And he was my sponsor for a while, but what I found was he talked the talk, but he didn't walk the talk. And I wanted some, and you'll see that many places. You'll see that. It's like the old, do as I say, not as I do, Theo. You know, you can figure that out. So, along the way, I got involved with my group, and there's things I did well in that group that, I wanted to be hip, slick, and cool. I wanted to be a somebody, you know. And what I found is the highest you get in this thing is sober. But I still wanted my pride and ego. My pride and ego were there, so they had an opening for a GSR. So I took the job as GSR, But I got the title, but I didn't do the work. And after about a year of that, I stepped down from it because it required some commitments. That was early on. But anyway, but along the way of doing some of that, going to district meetings and doing other things, getting involved in service, and there's a lot of familiar faces out here that I've been involved with service work with. I did it for the wrong reason, but I got the results. and that's just like, come on along, and that's some of the things that happened to me along with service. I just, like your speaker the other night, could not stress service enough, and that is truly, I couldn't stress it enough myself. Just getting involved, and there's so many, lots of things. Just helping your group out, helping other, doing a 12-step call. Like there's so many. And being, the whole premise, I believe, of Alcoholics Anonymous was to get back into society and be a useful member of society. So that means getting out and doing other service work in your community and being a useful member of, in society. And, God, I can just, I bet you, I can just think now of some of the experiences I had with Chuck and a few of those other guys. I don't know where to, I just don't know where to go with this. All of a sudden I'm going, God, I could go in many different directions here. I think I'll have a little drink here. It's not last call yet. But as a result of sponsorship, Lloyd came in my life, and one of the kindest, gentlest giants that I've met of a man. And what I've, because I have this huge pride and ego, and I've learned that, he's been in a different way than Chuck ever was to the ego deflation, because he's literally shown me what humility is about. Just through his actions of working, working the program and the steps and sponsorship. I know your group here has a strong sponsorship. And I through the course of being sober, a number of people have asked me to be their sponsor. And truly, I've learned more from those people working with them than I could ever give to them. I've seen more of my own character defects through other people. And the gift of it, and going to different, being willing to do different things. Just recently we were talking about the eighth and ninth step, and the ninth step was a pivotal part of my early sobriety. I was about 5 months sober, and that uncle I was telling you about used to take me to Disneyland, all those 3-2 bars. When I was 18 years old, I went up to his house one night. I lived a mile south of him, and I was broke and drunk, and I needed some money, and there was a guy living with him. And when I got there, they were drunk and passed out, and I stole the guy's wallet that was living with him. And the only person that knew that was me. And I never shared that with anybody. But every time I'd get around him, I was kind of the apple of his eye, because we did a lot of things together. We used to go up on the old Drummond Road up north of Two Harbors, and he'd let me drive his, even though he was a deputy sheriff, he'd let me drive his car out in the Thule's and drink beer, you know. And so I did a lot of things with him, you know, but I always had that ugly feeling in my gut when I get around him, because he got blamed for that, and the sheriff of Lake County was my godfather. His name was Rolf Ault. So the sheriff was called in and all that stuff, you know. And when I did my fourth and fifth step, he was on my list. And it was something that I knew that I was going to have to do, and I was scared to death to do it, because he could be a very volatile man, a very angry man. So I went back to my hometown, and in Two Harbors, and I went into his garage one Saturday morning, and we were alone, and I says, you know, Unc, do you remember that time when that happened? He says, yes, I do. He remembered it like it was yesterday. You know, and I says, I was the one that stole that money. I was the one that caused all that. But it just, you know, and it was, I was scared. It was extremely awkward for me. It was extremely awkward for him, because in his way, I was pretty special to him. And it was just really tense, you know, and I just know God sent somebody through that door that morning, wanted to buy something from him, and they did, you know. And after that guy had left, you know, I says, I'm really, truly sorry I caused that pain in your life, and I really would, you know, I'd like you to forgive me for it. But I didn't know how he'd react to it and that. And I says, I gotta go. And you know, he looked me right in his eyes, and he says, you know, Lee, what's between us is between us. And that was like when I walked out of that garage, it was like a monkey was taken off my back, a huge gorilla, that crap that had been in my guts for all those years. And so I was still pretty early on in my sobriety. And this GOD business was really, you know, this was tough for me to swallow. But I heard, just, you know, consider it good orderly direction, you know, group of drunks, whatever you want. And what happened along the way was I started developing faith. That gave me faith I was on the right path, because I experienced, just like it gets to the 12th step, you know, as a result of these steps. And I had an experience as a result of that. But going back to the third step prayer in our book, it talks about praying for the release of bondage of self. And I had asked for that. I said that prayer before I walked in that room, not knowing how it had happened. And I experienced that. And so I started doing other things. I made, you know, other amends. But that was a very pivotal point in my sobriety, and I just knew that I was on the right path. And my home group meeting, when I started, there was probably 20 guys. You know, there's sometimes there's over 100, 120 people that show up there every Saturday morning now. We break into bigger groups, but it was in those groups, going to meetings. So I know your sponsors always tell you, go to meetings. Read the literature, you know. Well, in those meetings, I heard people sharing my stories, little bits and pieces of my story. You know, they were sharing their raw meat. And what that did was it gave me courage to share my raw meat about Lee. You know, and Lee Johnson can live in Lee Johnson's skin today. Lee Johnson doesn't want to be somebody else but Lee Johnson today. Say, I always wanted to be something. If that look hip's looking cool, that's exactly what I wanted to be. If you wanted to be a cowboy for the day, that's what I wanted to be. If that made me fit in your group, you know, and I don't have to do that anymore. You know, I can be okay with Lee. I can look in the mirror today, and I like the guy I'm looking in the mirror with. Because there was a lot of, sometimes I couldn't stand who I was looking in the mirror at. And so many different experiences that, I could, speakers that I've heard that have touched my life, people in this room that have touched my life, that I've watched them changed right in front of my eyes. And that's, today I said, whether, you know, when I see somebody new and they have this God issue that I had, because I had the same, whether you believe in God, I don't think it makes any difference. Just come to these meetings. You start watching some people around you. If you keep coming to these meetings, you watch some people around you, and things are changing. Sometimes you don't even realize they're changing yourself. But you're watching people change. Now, how is that happening? How did a guy that I couldn't find my butt with either hand get in here, wanted to swallow the end of a 12-gauge shotgun to make all that emotional pain go away? How does a guy get to where I'm at today? I can't tell you. It's just like, how did I end up being at that point where I wanted to, the white line's in the middle of the road, 50 miles down the road, it's on the right side of the road. How'd it get there? It just gradually happened. That's how alcohol owned me. I had a higher power in my life for many years. It was alcohol, because I gave it all the power. And my time is getting short here, and I just thought I'd be so hip, slick, and cool here, and all this stuff would just flow out of me. All of a sudden, it's just like I'm getting a block, and I don't know why. I guess I'm running out of oxygen, so it's time to quit. But there was something I heard on early in my life, and it just captured me, and I'm going to close with this. It says, AA is not a plan for recovery that can be finished and done with. It is a way of life. And the challenge contained in its principles is great enough to keep any human being striving for as long as he lives. We cannot outgrow this plan. As arrested alcoholics, we must have a program for living that allows for limitless expansion. Keeping one foot in front of the other is essential for maintaining our arrestment. Others may idle in retrogressive groove without too much danger, but retrogression can spell death for us. However, this isn't as rough as it sounds, as we do become grateful for the necessity that makes us toe the line, and we find that we are compensated for the consistent effort by the countless dividends we receive. A complete change takes place in our approach to life. Where we used to run from responsibility, we find ourselves accepting it with gratitude that we can successfully shoulder it. Instead of wanting to escape some perplexing problem, we experience the thrill of challenge and the opportunity it affords for another application of AA techniques, and we find ourselves tackling it with a surprising vigor. The last 15 years, I could change that to the last 12 and a half for me, of my life have been rich and meaningful. I have had my share of problems, heartaches, and disappointments, because that's life. But also, I have known a great deal of joy and peace that is the handmaiden of an inner freedom. I have a wealth of friends, and with my friends, an unusual quality of friendship. For to these people, I am truly related. First through mutual pain and despair, and later through mutual objectives and a newfound faith and hope. And as years go by, together, sharing our experiences with one another, and also sharing the mutual trust, understanding, and love without strings, without obligation, we acquire relationships that are unique and priceless. There is no more aloneness, that awful ache so deep in the heart of every alcoholic that nothing before could ever reach it. That ache is gone and never need to return again. Now there's a sense of belonging and of being wanted and needed and loved. In return for a bottle and a hangover, we have been given the keys of the kingdom. And when I first heard that, I said, could that really happen to me? Guess what? That's what happened to me. So thank you.